Can I get an amen? Amen. Can I get an amen? Amen. Can I get a hallelujah? Hallelujah. Can I get a yes, Lord? Yes, Lord.
Hello and welcome to the Blockade Runner podcast number 229. My name is John. With me this afternoon is Ryan. What's up, Ryan?
Not much. Good afternoon. Just continuing to follow, because there is no avoiding it, all of the D23 information that has just been coming, and we're on the parks. Our thing is happening right now, and I was delighted to find out that there's going to be a new Frozen attractions at Disney parks in Hong Kong, I believe Shanghai, but more in my wheelhouse, Tokyo Disney.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty amped on that.
Look at you following the Disney Parks news, getting excited for your next trip to Disney. That is that's a little surprising after your last trip to Disney, but that's cool.
No, I mean, I love Tokyo Disney.
Okay.
Yep, okay. That's my favorite theme park I've ever been to. And that's not like a total Disney thing, because I've also been to Universal Studios in Osaka, I believe, and that one sucked. So it's not just like a, hey, it's cool because it's in Japan. It's because the park is just laid out so nicely. It's such like a great open space. And it's just like the vibe is just like more chill than like what you get from the the Disney here,
yeah.
I would say.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just a great park.
All right. Sure. So, well, Ryan, as you've pointed out, D23 has just taken place it's taking place this weekend. I guess it's still ongoing. I've gone ahead and checked out of D23 updates. So I'm glad to hear we've got somebody, not on the ground, but you know, you have your ear to the ground for D23 information. That's good to hear.
Yeah, if anything breaks while we're recording from the Nat Geo panel, I'll let you know if there's like a new koala documentary or something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed that you know that panel exists and is happening. So yeah.
Did you know that koalas are mean?
I did not know that. No.
Yeah, they're like actually like huge jerks. A lot of times, you know, they have their moments and like they're cool with their families and stuff. But there's like, ever check out a video of an angry koala? They make like the most horrible noises.
See, for a second, I feel like I just got a brief look at your day job. You know, when you looked me in the eyes and said, "Did you know koalas are mean?" You know, I feel like that's kind of
that
could be like your science lesson tomorrow or something. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Okay. No, but D23 is ongoing, and the games panel, Ryan, just as a quick aside before we really get into things, the games panel was not much to speak of as far as Star Wars goes. I think the only news coming out of the games panel, if I remember correctly, is that there's going to be a big DLC character pack thing happening for Lego Star Wars. Is that right?
I honestly didn't even hear about that.
okay, yeah, so I think there was nothing going on. There was no Jedi Fallen Order info or footage or anything. There was nothing about Star Wars Hunters even. It was a pretty low-key event as far as Star Wars games go. You had been kind of looking forward to that. Well, it was not much. I had been hyping up the possibility of the live action panel being a very, very big deal for Star Wars. And I think it was not really the way I was hoping, but I think it was. There was great stuff in the, I don't know, live action is not even the right word, because there was animation content there too. But whatever they referred to it as the D23 Insider, you probably know, but it was a fun, I think it was a fun afternoon, and we got some great trailers and things. So we are going to spend a good chunk of today's show discussing D23 and what went down yesterday in that panel. And we will also discuss at least a little bit the Obi-Wan Kenobi, A Jedi's Return, I believe it's called, documentary that premiered on Disney Plus Day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would say, that panel, it was the Lucasfilm showcase.
Okay, right? That's what it was.
And I think,
Wasn't it part of the Marvel, and didn't they just do like D23 yesterday? I thought all the like Disney movie stuff was all at the same time.
Maybe. I didn't actually watch any of it live.
Me neither.
I had stuff going on. But, basically all of it was just, all the Star Wars and Marvel stuff was just like, they were just the opening bands for the real highlight of the day, which is what the show ended on, which was James Cameron's Avatar 2, The Way of Water.
Hmm. Now, you did send me
the final... showing of the event.
You sent me a link about that, Ryan, and would you know that I actually didn't even open the link that you sent? I saw the headline and it was like, oh, footage from Avatar 2, and I thought, all right, let's keep moving. Yeah. You know, so I didn't actually check it out.
They gave everyone in the audience 3D glasses at the end, and showed some scenes from Avatar, which answers the question we had when we were talking last week about is that movie going to be in 3D? Are 3D glasses, do those still exist? But yeah, they pulled them out of the AMC dumpsters and going to be slapping them on our faces this December, maybe? Is that what it is? It's a holiday?
I think it's December, yes.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, I thought you were going to say Indiana Jones was the highlight, but...
Like it was, but we wouldn't know.
We weren't there. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into what we did see and what we did learn as far as Lucasfilm projects go at D23 yesterday. I have, in terms of order of appearance here, I have prioritized the Star Wars information, but I think we'll touch on the Willow and Indiana Jones stuff at least a little bit because it's going to be fun. So... Yeah. First off, let's start with the final Andor trailer that was released yesterday during the show.
Spies. Saboteurs. Assassins. We've all done terrible things on behalf of the rebellion.
Cassian Andor. Don't matter what you tell me or tell yourself. You'll ultimately die fighting these bastards. Wouldn't you rather give it all at once to something real?
We've chosen a side. We're fighting against the dark.
There is an organized rebel effort. Drill down and get a hunt started.
You realize what you've set in motion? People will suffer.
Time has come to force her hand.
At what cost?
Everything!
Every day we wait, they get stronger.
Let's take them by surprise.
For the greater good.
Call it what you will.
Let's call it war.
People are standing up. They're afraid. Right now, they're afraid.
Star Wars Andor, 3-episode premiere, streaming September 21st.
I've watched it a few times here. A lot of the content is, you know, as we saw with like The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi and all that stuff, a lot of the content is, you know, similar scenes, the same scenarios, the same characters we've seen in other trailers. So, you know, we're kind of just seeing different angles and different versions of things that we've seen in other trailers, but I still was pretty hyped, pretty pumped up, pretty excited watching this trailer again yesterday. There's some great footage, great shots. And, you know, like I said, a lot of it is similar, cut together in a different way, but I still thought it was pretty sweet. What did you make of this trailer, Ryan?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of exactly that. Like, there's, you know, all the good zingers of, like, lines of dialogue are in there, you know, slightly, you know, the shots are all, like, moved around a bit, so everything's, like, slightly recontextualized, but, no, I mean, it's just, like, I'm just ready to, like, watch the show, basically. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, kind of what we've talked about. Like, I'm not going through, like, nitpicking, like, frame by frame and, like, ooh, I wonder what planet they're on here, type stuff. Or, like, it's just, this is just going to, you know, the story is just going to roll out how it rolls out. And I think, for me, what built my hype even more was the Disney Plus Day special look, which I believe is probably what you saw at your Rogue One screening.
Yeah, that's exactly what we saw. Yes.
Okay.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah. Like, that was phenomenal. Like, mm-hmm. like, just, you know, them sitting and talking, and it's so funny. And I think it's a little different, but, like, I couldn't help but compare this to the Obi-Wan documentary, because I watched them back to back. And okay, so, sure. You know, like, the Andor one is kind of, you know, it's hyping something, it's previewing something. And then the Obi-Wan one is like a reflection back on something that's everyone's already seen. So there are differences, but just the way they talk about the shows and the, you know, Tony Gilroy and Diego Luna here talking about Andor, like, they were so just focused on, like, the themes of the show and, like, how the story is told. And there was, and, like, we kind of know this about Tony Gilroy, about how, you know, he came into Rogue One and he was like, yeah, I'm not really a Star Wars fan, kind of thing. Like, I want to tell a good story, and it just will happen to be set in this universe. And you know, like, that's kind of on display here. And, like, there's, I would love to hear, like, the completely unedited version of that, like, where they just, the camera's running. 'Cause there's, like, there's little lines in there that you're like, huh, that's an interesting, thing. Like, at one point he's like, yeah, there's an expectation of action with something like this. And it's like, I don't know. It's just, it's kind of funny because, like, a lot of times, like, you know, going into a Star Wars project, you know, you go back to, like, the prequel days and, you know, the hype around those. And it's like, there's going to be the most insane action sequences you've ever seen. It's going to melt your face. You know, ships and lightsabers everywhere. And, like, and you're always like, yeah, like, you know, people are going to want to see action because it's Star Wars. But anyways, the story we're telling and, yeah. And, like, I think just how personal, the story is to, like, Diego Luna's, like, identity as a person, you know, outside of him as, like, an actor and this character, like, that's really interesting to me. And, and, you know, it's kind of juxtaposed with, the conversations that Ewan and Hayden have, in the Obi-Wan, doc, where they're like, I became this character. This character became part of my identity. And I think with Diego Luna, he's like, this character is based on my identity. Mm. Like, and I don't know, there's just, like, such it was just so interesting watching those back to back and like how different both are. But yeah, like that, and then watching, you know, that full scene and how that played out. You know, it reminded me a lot of when we saw that at Celebration 2019, when we saw that first footage from Mandalorian and we saw the Werner Herzog scene, and we're like, whoa, this is really tense, and like this is just like human drama, like in Star Wars, and this is like a slow burn, and we haven't really gotten that, you know, in Star Wars kind of since then. There was like the one episode of Mandalorian where they like break into the, or they go undercover into the Imperial base, and you know, there's definitely that like same kind of tension, but like I feel like Andor is just going to be like full of that, you know, with both Cassian and also you know, Mon Mothma, and like every, like all these characters who are like kind of, you know, playing two roles as characters. Like it's just, the series is just so set up for those kind of moments. And that's just really exciting to me.
Right. Yeah. I think it's pretty telling that the sequence that they chose to sort of feature in this IMAX screening, you know, with all these people coming back to see Rogue One, is this, you know, intense conversation between two people with, you know, some action at the end, right? So there was a little bit of an action sequence there, but it definitely is highlighting, you know, those, that sort of tension, that kind of thing. So, and the recent advertising has been really, you know, brought to you from the director of the Bourne Legacy and Bourne Identity or whatever it is. And, you know, kind of emphasizing the, just, I think it's just going to be that, you know, that kind of story, right? Some political intrigue, some, you know, a little like a tense thriller, a little more, you know, maybe, I don't know if smaller scale is the right word, but, you know, focus on, you know, kind of human scenarios and with social implications and, you know, stuff like that, I think is really the impression the show is giving, which is going to be great. You know, it's going to be different for Star Wars. While still, you know, so much like the trailers and footage and even the scene, it still feels very Star Wars, but you know, I'm looking forward to that, you know, different kind of approach and different sort of storytelling. So I think that's going to be great. Diego Luna in that footage, there's a line, I wish I had written it down, I forget exactly what it is now, but he basically says like, none of the characters, none of the settings, none of the events, none of the things that happen or that we see in the show are there just to be cool, or, you know, there's nothing there, just, you know, everything's there for a reason, and it's to tell like a human story, you know, is essentially what he was saying. And that's not exactly what he said at all, but that it was the takeaway.
Also like in regards to like the characters, like no one's there just to like look cool and be a badass. Like everyone's there for like a purpose, and they all have like motivations, and you know,
you're going to care about these people, and the show cares about the people. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. So that was all really, really good. And, in the trailer, you know, afterwards, very exciting as well. So, we are a week and a half, you know, week and a half away, which is crazy, but it's going to be great. And three episodes that Wednesday. So I am super, super excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to get to in the middle of the work week, but you know, life finds a way.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to think more as we get closer to the release date of how I'm going to approach it. Do I wake up that Wednesday morning and try to sneak one in before I go to work and then watch, you know, the other two when I get home later? I feel like there's no way I'm going to be able to watch all three before work, but also there's no way I'm going to be able to go all day without having watched at least a little bit. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I kind of want to watch one before work, and then I would probably come home and watch all three, you know, with the fam and stuff that night. So we'll see. Yeah. There's no way I'm going into Thursday not having watched the three episodes. So, you know, that's not happening, but
yeah.
I'll have to figure out a schedule that works during the work week there. So
I know. I wish, like, you know, I was just talking about this with our friends Dan and Kevin. Like, we're all, we have like a separate group chat where we're talking about Rings of Power, and that has like an interesting launch time because it launches at midnight Eastern time. So Thursday night. So like,
well, is it Wednesday night then? And it comes Wednesday night at midnight or whatever?
No, like Thursday to Friday.
Okay. So the official release date is Friday, but it comes out at midnight.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So like this week and it was great when they did the premiere because they aired it at what was 7 p.m. my time. And I was like, that is a perfect time to watch some television. Like, but yeah, so it's at like, I usually go to bed at like 10:30. So, you know, Thursday night I watched half of an episode and then like woke up Friday morning and watched the second half, which is just like not ideal. Like, it's not an ideal way to, you know, consume a narrative. But that was because I can't, it's really hard to, you know, we did it in the past, but I've been needing to wake up earlier for work and stuff. So like, I can't really do the full hour episode before work. That's a tough thing. And it's like with these shows that are like, you know, the prime, I know like these have like these air worldwide and there's time zones and everything, but when the like the core of the audience is in like the United States, like why not air it at like 6 or 7 p.m.? Like, I just don't understand.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting that you were using the verb air it, you know, as if like it's being broadcast at that time. Yeah. 'Cause really it's just like clicking a thing to make that video go from hidden to available to everybody, or, you know, whatever the technical, you know, part of it is, but mm-hmm. it's not airing. It's just like, you know, we're allowing people to start accessing this thing at this time. So you're right. You know, it reminds me, Ryan, of like when games go live on the Nintendo eShop, which mm-hmm. is sometimes like when a new game is coming out, I guess when it's a big game, they will come out at midnight, right? Like Splatoon 3 probably came out at midnight on Thursday night, Friday morning, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Depending on your time zone. I don't know. But the rest of the games that aren't like big event games releases or whatever, they go live sometime on what's the release
like
date?
Like noon Friday or Eastern time.
Right. But it's sort of just like a, I don't know, it's going to eventually it's going to pop up, you know, it'll be live at some point and just check every half an hour or whatever to see if the game is up. And, you know, they definitely could, I guess they, you know, there's no reason they couldn't just say 7 p.m. is when we're going to make that video go live. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that there's just an entirely different relationship with a streaming service. It's like, what day is it going to be on that streaming service, you know, versus I'm going to sit down at this time to watch a thing, because streaming services are all predicated around not being appointment viewing, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, well, on this date on, you know, and even, yeah, it's all about release dates. This is the day it's going to come out. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm with you though. You know, I'm with you. I think it would make more sense.
But I remember Game of Thrones, and I think House of the Dragon is the same way.
How HBO does it.
Yeah, they'd air at like 6 or 7 or 8 p.m. depending on like where you are, and like that on like a Sunday, and mm-hmm. that's, you know, that's really nice. And I don't think like it doesn't seem to be hurting them in any way.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think I'm with you. I wish they would do that. But I think it also kind of depends on how you frame it, because it's like, okay, so if Sunday is the release date on HBO Max for a new episode of House of the Dragon or whatever, right? You can look at it like, oh, well, I didn't have to wait until midnight. They let me watch it at 8 p.m. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is I had to wait all the way until 8 p.m. versus like the way it releases on Disney Plus. You could have watched it anytime that Sunday. You could have watched it Sunday at 10 a.m. You could have watched it Sunday afternoon. You could have watched it anytime Sunday, but instead you had to wait till 8 p.m. on Sunday to watch it, you know? So it really is like, it just sort of, yeah. I mean, because essentially with Disney Plus, I think the way they would frame it or describe it or whatever is like, you're not having to wait until 8 o'clock the next night to watch that show. You can start watching it at midnight, or, you know, you can watch it when you wake up in the morning or whatever. So
if you're in college or unemployed.
Right. But yeah, I guess you'd be waiting on your method. You'd be waiting an extra day to watch it though. Right. Cause it would be later. I don't know. I tell you what, HBO shows, they debut too late for me. I kind of get annoyed because it's like, man, we want to watch that show on Sunday night, but 8 p.m. and it's an hour long, and you know, my wife falls asleep usually at 8:15 every night. So like, how am I going to get through that? You know, so okay. Yeah.
No, 8 p.m. would be like perfect for me. Yeah. Like, I would be so happy with that.
All right. But
anyways.
Okay. Well, I don't know what time Tales of the Jedi is going to release. I guess it'll be midnight or whatever. But I do know that all 6 episodes of Tales of the Jedi are going to be releasing on October 26th. So that's right in the middle of spooky season. So I'm going to have to carve out a little time out of, you know, watching horror movies and biting on blood capsules and stuff to, you know, watch Tales of the Jedi.
Everywhere there is life. But you must face death. Honor it. Do not fear it. Jedi. Ahsoka is Jedi.
The best way I can protect you is to teach you how to protect yourself.
Master Dooku.
I want to bring peace and order to the galaxy.
Master, stop!
It is the only way you will truly have victory,
my Padawan.
Again! Again!
Dooku, stand down.
I'm tired of fighting.
I've been warning them about the coming darkness. Let's hope all that training pays off.
Yeah, we learned a little bit about the show, I guess, yesterday. But Ryan, you and I are lucky enough that we were at Celebration and we were at the Tales of the Jedi panel. And so I feel like we saw this trailer already.
We saw the trailer and we saw one of the episodes.
We did see one of the episodes. Yeah. But I mean, like, I know we saw a trailer. I'm thinking it was the same thing, right? It was the same trailer, pretty much.
I don't know. I didn't watch this new one.
Oh, you didn't watch the new one?
No.
You were at the Tales of the Jedi panel, though.
Yeah, I was sitting next to you.
Okay. Well, some panels you were, some panels you weren't. Some panels you were there for part of them, then you got up and went to another thing you wanted to go to. You know, it's a jet-setting lifestyle at Star Wars Celebration. I can't keep track of everything. Okay, so you were like, I already saw this trailer. I'm not even going to click on it on YouTube. Got it.
I think it's the combination of that and also, like, even seeing it at the panel, this isn't, you know, in the metaphor of Star Wars being a buffet, this is like the vat of coleslaw or something that, like, okay, well, that's good for people who like that. But yeah, that's not really what I'm rushing to put on my plate.
Okay. Well, all right. I feel like, you know, to me, this was like not, it was cool, but it was just reminding me of something I'd already seen at Celebration. I'm sure for many of our listeners and friends and stuff who weren't at that panel or didn't go to Celebration, it's like, cool, this is my first look at Tales of the Jedi, so it probably is pretty exciting. It looks like Clone Wars season 8.7.5 or whatever, you know, it looks like an extension of the Clone Wars. Like, as I look at this footage right now, it's like, oh yeah, that's Mace Windu from the Clone Wars. That's, you know, Ahsoka from the Clone Wars. Like, it all looks just like the Clone Wars. More so than the Bad Batch, even, I think, more so than, you know, much more so than the Rebels. So yeah, it just feels extremely Clone Wars-y. And I bring that up to say that, you know, so many people love Clone Wars so much. I probably said something similar to this after Celebration, but it doesn't really make sense to do more Clone Wars, but this is a way to kind of do a tiny little slice of new Clone Wars stuff, you know, not set during the Clone Wars, but very much in that style, in a lot of ways. So I think that's gotta be exciting for people. And, you know, this could be your first look, if you hadn't seen any of the footage before, your first look of a young Qui-Gon Jinn, a young Count Dooku. You know, many of us have been, you know, sort of fantasizing or dreaming our entire lives about seeing a young Count Dooku battling Yaddle, you know, and now you can watch that on YouTube.com. You can watch a little footage of Yaddle battling Count Dooku, you know, so yeah. Although when I say like, oh, is this the same trailer? I'm wondering if it is. I think it's got to be mostly, but I'm not sure that I see our Wookiee Jedi friend in this trailer, because the trailer we saw, didn't they show our Wookiee Jedi friend? Oh, that's Bad Batch 2. That's Bad Batch 2. Okay, never mind. See, I get it all mixed up. You know, like a 311 song.
On tour with Eve 6.
Yeah.
Or playing shows at least. Yeah.
And so I'll have to check my local listings. I do like 311. So anyway, I don't know. Do you have anything else on the Tales of the Jedi, Ryan?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it, but I guess if everything we learned about in this buffet, or if it is a buffet, then yeah, it's probably the coleslaw for me too, I guess. So, yeah.
How do you feel about coleslaw though?
Not into it really. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Okay. Is there mayo in coleslaw? Is it like a mayo based?
I don't know. It's just too many things in like happening.
Yeah, no, I'm never, no, yeah, I'm not a big coleslaw person.
Yeah, but some people, you know, some people love coleslaw and will, you know, just straight up eat like a plate full of coleslaw. And, you know, this is for those freaks.
Well, and I kind of do prefer coleslaw as a condiment more than like a side or a, you know, a meal of its own. Yeah, so like a little bit of coleslaw, like on a sandwich, you know, with other stuff in it, like a sandwich that a coleslaw is an appropriate, you know, accompaniment to. Then I, you know, now we're talking. But to just scoop up forkfuls of coleslaw, not something I don't usually get after too often. Yeah, no,
not even near any of my stuff.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, I will alert. What's the name of the buffet that we go to, Ryan? The one
on Perryville. Buffet?
No, not Old Country. That's not around anymore, unfortunately.
Oh, is what is
it's
Cracker
the famous
Barrel?
One? No, is Cracker Barrel's not a no. It's
is
not a
buffet.
That a buffet.
I don't know.
All right, never mind. Let's move on. Let's talk about the Mandalorian season 3. Let's talk about the Mandalorian season 3.
Yeah.
We got the trailer. We got the trailer for Mandalorian season 3.
I got an excited text from my friend Ian, asking if Colorado Ian, asking, you know, had I seen the Mando season 3 trailer yet? And I was like, let me tell you about that. Saw it in May.
Yeah. Did you actually do that? Did you flex on him like that?
I did.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's the point of going to Celebration if you can't, you know, have if you these, can't like, flex on people afterwards. Victories. Yeah.
Right.
This is the one that you saved? You are Azit's father. A clan of two. But you have removed your helmet. Then you are a Mandalorian no more.
Your cult fractured our people. Where were you then?
Did you think your dad was the only Mandalorian?
Kid, hang on. You ready for an adventure?
Yeah. So, and I mean, like, we did cover this trailer then, right? I mean, we talked about it at that point. We talked about the fact that it's going to be digging into Mandalorian culture and history more so than the show has done before, that we're going to Mandalore. Bo-Katan is heavily featured in the trailer and seems like she could be a problem for Din Djarin and for Grogu. There's a bunch of super adorable shots of Grogu with Din in the Naboo starfighter that he's using now. So, I mean, it was such a fun trailer. Really exciting, super got me mega hyped up in May when we saw it, and I was just like really happy that they released it yesterday so that I can, you know, watch it at home and see it again. And actually I'm excited to show it to people, you know, that weren't able to watch it before, and talk about it with people who weren't able to watch it before too. So I think this is a super effective trailer, and I think people are going to be very hyped for Mandalorian season 3.
Picks right up where Mandalorian season 2 left off.
Yes. I mean,
I do wonder, like,
Book of Boba Fett is really just Mando season 2.5, you know. So if you look at it,
but now, like, now that this is out there, they you know, I guess we get to kind of see, you know, how this trailer lands with people who didn't watch Book of Boba Fett, like Mando only viewers, which I don't have any anecdotal data on that, because everyone I know who watches Star Wars stuff watches like all of it. So, but we know that there's, you know, Mandalorian had a significantly larger audience than Book of Boba Fett.
Do we know that?
Yeah, I think
Book of Boba Fett was out there setting records for first day of viewership and stuff, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know. I remember the few stories I had read about the numbers was like surprising to me, because anecdotally speaking, I do know people who watch Mandalorian who didn't watch Book of Boba Fett. And also I know a fair number of people who didn't watch Kenobi either. And I was definitely surprised by that. So I think, I would assume that Mandalorian has the strongest numbers as far as a Star Wars series on Disney Plus goes, but I don't know that it feels like Book of Boba Fett didn't have a lot of staying power and didn't really make a big splash with people, but I also feel like people watched it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it did. It definitely did. I know the finale in particular did, like, crazy numbers. So maybe the Venn diagram is a circle. It also is just so weird because, like, they're just, like, no one talked about it. Like, Book of Boba Fett, like, compared to, you know, Mandalorian, especially season two, which was like a, you know, that was like the TV show for the time it was on. And there was so much, like, you know, and there's been consistently so much merch and everything out there. And I don't know. Yeah, I guess we'll kind of see. I mean, that's, you know, that's marketing's people's, that's for them to, like, figure out that. But yeah, because I was always kind of, like, expecting, even before the trailer, like, a recap or a, you know, something to, like, explain the stuff, like, the directly related to Din and Grogu that wasn't in Mando season two. But,
well, I don't think we talked about it, but did you see that they put out a video on YouTube kind of hosted by Diego Luna talking about the timeline of Andor and where it fits in the Star Wars timeline? I mean, I don't know how many people that actually will get to, or, you know, how much penetration that'll have with the overall audience of, you know, people they want to watch that show on Disney Plus. But yeah, there was an informant video out there trying to, you know, kind of clarify for people, you know, yeah, where everything is. So, and yeah, as you were discussing that, Ryan, I was looking at some of the comments on the trailer for Mandalorian season three on YouTube, and they are wildly positive. I went through like 25 comments and I haven't found a negative one yet. Like, everybody's like, oh my God, I can't wait. Like, all the feels, chills.
Yeah.
Din Djarin's the best dad in the galaxy, you know, like, super stoked for Andor. Then they drop this teaser. All is right in the galaxy far, far away. Like, people are very positive on this, you know, based on this little selection of YouTube comments. So,
yeah, I mean, provided Disney isn't astroturfing that as well. But, you know, I mean, I think that does, like, realistically track, because, like, Mandalorian, even more so than Rogue One, is the good Star Wars, you know, in like the general conversation. Like, that's the good one. Like, you know, even the haters like that.
I can find some negative comments when I look at the replies to the positive comments, though. So,
Yeah. How dare people enjoy this thing?
Yeah.
Let me tell you why you're wrong for being excited about this thing. No, I mean, go ahead.
I just got to share a super dumb one, maybe the dumbest one ever. Like, somebody posted that it was strong and meaningful storytelling, and a really brilliant commenter responded, "Something Pablo and the writers group could learn." Ha 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 ha.
Hmm.
Because, you know, Pablo Hidalgo writes all the Star Wars shows. I don't know if you knew that or not, but yeah. Hmm.
That's really it's so fun to, like, follow him on Twitter and, like, how he's just like, yep, I'm the scapegoat for every Star Wars thing you don't like, I guess.
Yep.
Like, somehow that's probably the most one of the most knowledgeable, if not the most knowledgeable person about Star Wars. And everyone thinks he's, like, ruining it, even though, like, he's, like, kept the ship upright. Like, and I can't even imagine how wrong things could have gone without, like, him it, you know, at Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. Well, Ryan, I set aside a little time to talk about like Mandalorian season 3 and Tales of the Jedi and whatever. But really, you know, I wanted to make sure we had a good significant chunk here for you to discuss the Bad Batch season 2 news. I want you to be able to process your feelings here and talk through this. We thought Bad Batch season 2 was going to be debuting this fall on Disney Plus. Turns out now it has been pushed to January 4th. So we're going to be waiting until January 4th for Bad Batch season 2.
A reason to stay alive until 2023.
There you go. There you go. I like that. That's a good spin. No, you're not a Bad Batch fan. I am a Bad Batch fan. I am looking forward to the show. So just in case anybody, you know, heard that weak attempt at a joke there and thought like, oh, these guys hate Bad Batch. No, just Ryan hates Bad Batch. I like it. So, I thought maybe you'd
correct me. I'm not going to argue.
I don't hate it.
I don't like, I wouldn't say hate is a strong word.
Yeah.
But I don't, I went to this panel at Celebration you know, I was in there and, you know, like, I love the people who are working on it. You know, they're just super passionate people, passionate about these characters and the stories. And I know like there's a huge chunk of the fan base who like really loves these characters and the story being told here. It is just not my jam. It's not, you know, not my favorite food on the buffet. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would compare it to because I already used the coleslaw.
Right. You got to find something sub coleslaw. Yeah, but like, what about egg salad or like tuna salad or something like that?
Well,
like,
I mean, I wouldn't eat tuna salad because I don't eat meat.
Yeah, sure.
But I mean, that would be like,
I was just thinking, like, what's got more mayo than coleslaw? Like, what's even more?
I mean, just
mayo,
any mayo. Okay. Yeah, not anything from the mayo food group,
the family, mayo family.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, I would say Bad Batch and Tales of the Jedi are kind of from the same part of the food pyramid.
It does seem like it may be that. They do feel pretty closely related, stylistically, that sort of thing. Yeah.
But,
okay.
Hey, well, I'm glad. I like legitimately am glad that there is so much Star Wars that there can be things that, you know, we don't like. And, you know, I think Andor is going to be one of those things that is not going to be for everyone. And it also seems like that is extremely targeted towards my interests. And I'm glad that Star Wars doesn't have to be just like this broad thing where it's like, here's the one movie you get. This is what you get for the next 3 years. And we're going to try to make it like as broadly appealing as possible. And you better like it. Like,
yeah.
And so, yeah, I think this is great that this stuff exists and I can be like, yeah, I don't really care about that. And then still have like, but this next thing, like I'm stoked for.
I think it's cool. A casualty of Bad Batch. I'm looking forward to it very much. I'm excited for it to come back. I think this scheduling is a casualty of, well, or I think it's just indicative of it not being a huge priority for Disney Plus or Lucasfilm or whatever, because it sort of feels like, okay, well, we had Obi-Wan Kenobi, and then for a while it felt like maybe this was going to come out, Bad Batch, like in between Kenobi and Andor. And once it didn't, like the release date just kind of keeps slipping, and it sort of feels like, well, you know, we've got Andor, and then after Andor, Willow is happening like right after Andor, basically. As soon as Andor is done, then Willow starts, and then you're into Christmas and everything. So I feel like they're just, you know, just keep pushing it back to make room for other shows that are ready to go. So it also kind of tells me Mandalorian season 3 is not going to be launching in January. Although I thought that's what they had said, but it feels like that's not the case now. The new trailer just says 2023. Nothing in there about a date. So I'm going to guess that Mandalorian season 3 is more of like a March, April thing or something like that, or later. I don't know, but this show releasing in January makes me think Mando season 3 is maybe going to be pushed a little bit further back than we thought.
Yep.
Hey, you added something here about the Young Jedi Adventures, Ryan. What are the Young Jedi Adventures? Or what did we learn about Young Jedi Adventures yesterday?
Well, I think this is the one that was like... I think this is the show that was rumored, and the rumor kept getting mixed up when it was like, okay, the next big Lucasfilm animation project is going to be the High Republic, like, animated show. And then it's like, then there was like the rumor that like Skeleton Crew, like that was going to be the High Republic show. And there's like all this stuff. But the High Republic show, it turns out, is this Young Jedi Adventures, which is on Disney Junior. So this is going to skew very, very young. And you know, it's going to be for, you know, small kids. And I just hope they've read all those Charles Soule and Kevin Scott books, or they're not going to know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. But did they talk about this yesterday? Like, I didn't see anything about this in any of the stories that I read.
I just saw it. It was like a Star Wars official account tweet. That was
Okay.
They said who like the voices of characters were going to be.
Oh,
I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just like I think it was like, and it was. I think, and then I think Pablo retweeted it and said like, "This is High Republic era."
Oh wow! Okay, cool.
Because it also, like, the original tweet had a bunch of people commenting, like, oh, we know how this is going to end, and, like, pictures of Anakin Skywalker in the Jedi Temple. And then, like, people, like, arguing with the tweets, being like, no, this is High Republic. And, like, that whole thing was happening.
Yeah.
So I think they needed to kind of clarify that.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool. Well, we'll look forward to more information on that. We did get just a little bit on Skeleton Crew, which I think, you know, mainly what we heard here is that it's a few weeks into shooting. The way it was reported was kind of confusing to me, where I saw one reporter describe it like almost like it was done shooting.
I saw that too.
And then, I think that was incorrect, because then I saw something else that was pretty clear that I think it's a few weeks into shooting. So, I guess either way, I don't know, but it's definitely happening. Now it's being filmed, or I guess there's a tiny possibility it's done, but I don't think so. I think it's happening now. And, there was an image of Jude Law, in the show.
Oh, it's nice to see.
Has been released. Yeah. Yep. And then the kids are behind him, right? Because it's the show about the kids who get lost somewhere out there in the galaxy. So we can't really see them too much. They're pretty blurry back there, but it looks like a few human characters and at least maybe one or two humanoid aliens back there, I think, right? Jude Law in the photo has got an adorable little smile / smirk on his face as he is surrounded by three of those, ring doorbells from Jabba's palace that pop out at, C-3PO.
So, okay. So I mean, is this screenshot, that you have in the notes, is this a painting, or was that like a scene from the show?
So Ryan, I went back and forth about that very topic.
Okay.
In my own mind for like an hour. I believe it is a photograph, and I believe that whoever took that photograph, A, it was in a low light room, and B, they're kind of zoomed in. So I think it's got this soft, like, painterly thing because it's a bad photograph, just, you know, bad conditions. You know what I mean? I'm not saying the person who took it did something wrong, but, you know, like, it's a photograph from your phone in like not great conditions and zoomed in and stuff. I think that's what's going on. Because, yeah, it does look like a concept art painting, right? It seems like it could be the cover of Phil Schostak's Skeleton Crew art of book or something, right? but I believe it is a photograph, I believe. But, yeah, tough to say 100%. But everything, it sounded like it's a photo.
Yeah, it also kind of looks like the filter that they sometimes put on, like, retro games when they're released onto high-definition platforms.
Yeah. But if you go
filter, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Is the worst.
The one that smooths everything out and blurs it, mm-hmm. blurs it and smooths it. If you go into your photo, you know, library and look at some photos where you were zoomed and it was like low light, I think you'll
like
see
concert photos and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, they always end up like looking like that. And why did I even take my phone out for this?
Yep. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I continue to be very excited for Skeleton Crew, so I'm sure it's a long ways off, because I think, you know, before we get that, we're going to get Ahsoka, which we found, or we didn't really get too much, I guess. I think they showed, I don't know if they showed some footage there or not, or maybe a few images or something like that. But, you know, maybe not. We saw a little footage of Ahsoka. Actually, I know they did, because the painting that the footage we saw ended on, I saw yesterday on Twitter that there was some footage where that was shown a little more,
like a different angle.
Different angle, maybe more of it shown or something like that. So you know, where we like sort of, it slowly dawned on us, like, cause Sabine walked by it, you know, in the footage we saw. So it was like, it looks like it was just an image. And then by the time it was over, we were like, oh my God, that was like, that's from the show, that somebody just walked past it or whatever. But I think yesterday, like you said, different angle and maybe a little more like, oh, this is footage from the show, not like this is a cool trick, like where they got us at the end, you know, but like actually showed a little footage of that. And I'm assuming that was part of a reel of footage, you know, maybe some of it similar to what we saw, or some of it the same that we saw in Celebration, maybe some different footage. I don't know, but Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, Rosario Dawson were all there. I think maybe that's it, but they were all there. I think this show is done, or if not done, very, very close to done. I saw conflicting reports on that as well, in terms of the filming. But Jon Favreau apparently called it Dave Filoni's magnum opus, so that's exciting. I can just tell you literally, like, following the guy's career and the stuff he's made over the last 15 years, like, yes, this is his magnum opus.
It is.
Like, yeah, right. Yeah. Right. These are the characters he's created. Specifically, Ahsoka is the character he's brought with him to like every single thing he's worked on almost, or maybe literally, I don't know, but like, yeah, like, these are his characters. This is his little corner of Star Wars that he's been, you know, primarily responsible for. So I bet he's, and he's like the showrunner, right? And this is a live action show, like, that he's the showrunner for. So on like a number of levels, right? Like, yeah. This is his magnum opus. So,
and, you know, he's been building, you know, his live action chops over the past few years as well. So, yeah, I think that's accurate for sure.
Yep. And that makes me excited, because I feel like it's going to have a lot of heart, because, you know, he's so personally connected to it. So I'm looking forward to that part of it. We also learned, not officially, but just about as close to officially as we could, that Aemon Esfandi is going to be playing Ezra in the Ahsoka show. It has not been confirmed by any official sources that Ezra is even in the show, but obviously, you know, people have believed for a long time that he is. And for a long time, the rumors were strong. People believed that Mena Massoud, who is in the live action Aladdin, would be playing Ezra. So the story broke, I believe, on Friday that Aemon Esfandi is going to be playing Ezra instead. And then Massoud tweeted, "Glad the rumors will stop now. Never really had a fair shot at it, unfortunately. Parentheses, one self-tape months ago, but just wasn't meant for me, I guess. Can't deny the dude looks exactly like Ezra. hope it's done justice. So it's Twitter. It's 140 characters, whatever, 280. I don't know what it is these days, but I'm reading, never really had a fair shot at it. Unfortunately, one self-tape months ago as I auditioned for the role of Ezra in the show Ahsoka. I didn't get it. Congratulations to this guy who got the role I was trying to get. Is that how you interpret that?
Yeah. And like, okay. Also, that was months ago. This guy got the role months ago, and they have been filming.
Well, yeah, okay. But the tweet from Mina Massoud was from September 9th. Like, he just tweeted, like, oh, you know. Or you're saying the audition tape was months ago?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, right, exactly. But, like, again, we don't have any confirmation from any official source that they've been filming for months and Ezra's in the show. We just know they've been filming for months. So it's like,
right.
Because I could totally see that the show is about Hera and Sabine and, you know, Chopper and other characters from Rebels looking for Ezra. I don't necessarily expect, like, when Ahsoka the show starts, it's like, what's up, Ezra? Glad we found you 2 years ago. What's going, you know what I mean? Like, so I could
wait
I could
for
totally
Book
see-
of Boba Fett season two.
right. I could totally see. sorry, that made me laugh. Just thinking about the possibility of answering the question of where Ezra's been.
I think that's just where things need to happen now. Like the great mysteries of Star Wars. They just need to. There's a new Book of Boba Fett season. We get to see, you know, Boba Fett and Fennec hanging out, doing cool stuff. And then, like, also, like, here's what happened to Snoke.
Yeah. Well, okay. So anyway, but I could see Ezra being the Luke Skywalker in The Force Awakens kind of thing at the end of the season or something, especially because Rosario Dawson said she's hoping for a second season, which makes me think it's planned to be more than one season. In which case, you know, you don't necessarily, I don't know. I guess we don't know what the show is about, but I feel like it's about the search for Ezra, in which case he could be a small part of season one. And, you know, there's like, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility that he would not even be in season one. So I'm just saying this is more confirmation. It's confirmation of something we have basically known, but like, I feel like now we can say authoritatively, like, Ezra is in the show, you know, because you got Hollywood actors out there straight up saying, like, congrats on getting the part I auditioned for, you know? So,
yeah. I mean, I think, like, the show, you know, going by what we've seen in live action is the search for Thrawn, which is by extension the search for Ezra.
Mm-hmm. But why do they want to find Thrawn so badly? I mean, really, it's Ezra is the one that they want to find, right?
Well, I mean, but that's what Ahsoka, like, says in that episode of Mandalorian. She asks, where's Thrawn?
Oh, yeah, okay. Good call. But isn't it because she wants to find Ezra?
I mean, she doesn't ask, where's Ezra? Like,
all right, yeah, that's fair. That's a good point. Okay, all right. Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, for just like the storytelling purposes here, like, Thrawn is better than Ezra.
Hmm. Elliot, we're watching Rebels.
That is a 90s alternative joke that I stole from Kevin. That was not actually what I think.
Okay, good, because I'm just saying, I'm watching Rebels season 3 right now. We've been rewatching Rebels since this, you know, middle of the summer, and we're halfway through season 3, and the other day Elliot was just like, this guy's kind of lame. Like, you know, I've had enough of this guy, basically. Like, we can move on to a different character now. Yeah.
Oof.
I can't remember what he said, but it was pretty much the same thing we were all saying as we were watching Rebels the first time, which I like Thrawn a lot personally, but it was sort of like, okay, so every episode he just lets him get away and he's like, oh, but really I actually secretly won this situation, you know, even though they got away.
Chess.
Yeah.
Four-dimensional chess.
Yeah. I think Elliot's a little bit like, all right, I've seen that enough times at this point, so we'll see. We'll see.
Well, it sounds like, Thrawn outsmarted your son.
He, that's how he would frame it. That's how Thrawn would frame it. Yeah.
Oh, like, you want to be gone? Yeah, another win for me.
Children are bored by my character on this children's animated show. That's proof that excellent. I'm really awesome. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. So, the episodes we watched today were great. The first one was the one where, or was it the second one? I don't know. We watched the one where Ezra and Thrawn, or not Ezra and Thrawn, Ezra and Maul find out that Obi-Wan is on Tatooine, you know, leading up to the Twin Suns episode, which is 5 or 6 away, but the seed was planted for that today. So that was really cool. Yeah, it's been good. It's been good. So enjoying Rebels, and it'll be nice to have that. It won't be that fresh for me anymore by the time Ahsoka actually comes out, but you know, having it not be like 5 years out of mind, you know, when Ahsoka comes out will be nice. So, yeah. All right. Let's talk just quickly about the Lucasfilm projects that were highlighted yesterday that are not Star Wars. There was a Willow trailer. I don't know. Did you watch the Willow trailer, Ryan?
I did. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know if that's the same one we saw, or did they release the one we saw? I guess they released the one we saw, right? So this must be a new trailer.
Yeah. This definitely had new stuff in it.
Okay.
Like, yeah. I would say it was mostly new stuff.
Okay. Well, yeah, that makes sense, because the other trailer is up and online on YouTube and people can watch that. So I'm just I'm confused about everything from Celebration. You know, you were offended earlier when I couldn't remember if you were in the Tales of the Jedi panel with me or not, but like, I can't even remember. Did you see a trailer for Willow? Did they put the trailer up if we did see it? You know, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, this show looks so fun. It's going to be really great. I think you know, people have to be excited for this as well. We learned Christian Slater is joining the cast of Willow, or is in the show. That's kind of fun.
Icing on the cake.
Yep. And it's coming out November 30th. So yeah, right after Andor wraps up, we'll have Willow to look forward to.
Yeah. And I think it's in some ways, it's kind of like the timing is just interesting. It's just, you know, the way sometimes a bunch of like sort of tangentially similar things exist in the entertainment space at like one time. And I think, like, you know, it was already kind of a, you know, whether intentional or not, kind of funny coincidence that Rings of Power and House of the Dragon have been going head to head right now. And then now we're getting this like kind of third fantasy, like medieval fantasy thing with, like, you know, really high production values. Like, for real, like, this show looks so good. Like, I was really not kind of expecting it to look as good as it does. But, and I don't know, maybe like, you know, under scrutiny when actually watching like a full episode, maybe it won't. But yeah, like, and I think, you know, I was just kind of thinking like, okay, so for people who didn't, you know, didn't watch like the old film, you know, which I think, I don't know, that's like it's not exactly a classic. I think it is to like people like us, but I don't think it's like quite as like timeless as like if you show someone like A New Hope and
people
like, and so it's like, okay, like, is this show just for, you know, people like us who saw, you know, Willow when we were like kids? And like, probably mostly. But what I did notice about this trailer, and I think what's kind of, you know, exciting, and the way it kind of differentiates itself from the other like high fantasy stuff on, you know, streaming services right now, is just like the humor and whimsiness of it. Like, it's, I mean, you know, like House of the Dragon, Rings of Power, like, they are just the most like po-faced, serious, complicated shows that you can watch. Like, you know, I've been reading Anthony Bresnikan's Rings of Power wrap-ups after every episode over at Vanity Fair. And like, I'm like, I've read the Silmarillion, I've read Lord of the Rings, I've read The Hobbit, I've read, you know, the appendices of Lord of the Rings, and like, there is still so much stuff I am missing when I watch these episodes. Like, it is so complex. And I know it's kind of the same thing with like, I'm not watching House of the Dragon, but I know it's kind of like the same thing where it's like, you need to know about like seven generations of different bloodlines to like really appreciate this one line of dialogue here, or this like sword hilt or whatever. And I think, I mean, the Willow trailer, like the plot seemed as simple as could be. Like, it was so like boiled down to just like kind of the binary, almost like Star Wars, like where it's like, yep, there's an evil and the good needs to defeat the evil. Like, mm-hmm. that's what this is. Like, that mm-hmm. there's your plot. And like, it's not like, you know, it's not this all like the racial tensions and like the, you know, backstabbing for power and stuff of like these other high fantasy shows and stories. Like, it's just like this very kind of like simple, at least on the surface level from what they've shown us. But like, I think really where the character comes in is like, just like everyone's like quipping like throughout the trailer, and like people are not quipping in Rings of Power. Like, any like scene where people are talking, it is like a 7-minute conversation. Like, and you know, and people are making jokes, and there's like silly things happening. And yeah, and I think that's what in some ways I think it will be you know, almost not in like a negative way, because I think both, you know, House of the Dragon and Rings of Power are like excellent shows that are being, you know, critically well received. Like, they're very good shows. So I don't think it's going to be necessarily like a palate cleanser in terms of like quality, but like maybe in terms of tone, you know, for it to kind of come out after those shows, which is, you know, kind of cool and exciting. Because, yeah, I mean, I like this, you know, I like high fantasy and like the genre, and you know, I wouldn't want a Willow show to try to be Game of Thrones or to try to be Lord of the Rings. Like, yeah, it just needs to be a Willow show, which is, you know, also a very silly movie in a lot of ways. Like, yeah, there's like stakes, but there's never really like, you know, you're never really expecting like a red wedding or anything. Like, you kind of expect all the main characters to sort of like make it through for the most part. And yeah.
So, well, certainly. And it's cool. Yeah, I think it's going to be amazing. And I think it should maintain a playfulness. And I mean, ultimately, I think Willow is a kid's movie, right? And I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
Star Wars is a kid movie in a lot of ways. And, you know, a lot of these things are, but like, I would think of, say, like the Hobbit animated movie that I watched when I was young, you know, that captured my imagination, and the Hobbit, the book itself too. I loved them, and they really captured my imagination, but they were really presented for kids and made with kids in mind, I think, much more so than like the Lord of the Rings movies from Peter Jackson. Not that that's a criticism of those movies, but those are, you know, aiming at a different audience than that Hobbit animated movie I watched when I was a kid, you know, or even the Hobbit book itself. And, you know, I'd have to go back and sort of double check all of this, but I think the lineage of even Willow being made is really connected to, you know, the Ewoks TV movies and George Lucas wanting to make movies that his kids could watch. And, you know, even there's just something with, I mean, obviously I think, and maybe everybody feels this way about the decade they grew up, but I feel like the 80s was this, like, you know, golden age for children's movies and movies for kids and movies that were like made for kids, but, you know, everybody in the family would kind of have fun with or be interested in. I think there was a lot more of that happening then than there is now. And I think Willow, the movie Willow, you know, to me, when I go back and watch it, I'm like, this is so silly, but, but it's fun, silly. And, it just seems like something that would capture a child's imagination. And I think that this show should do that as well. And it should be something that kids can watch. Actually, just very quick story, but I went to pick up my kids from my mom's house this morning because they, you know, my kids spent the night with their grandma last night, you know, and she was saying it's so hard to find something to watch with Owen and Elliot because Owen is 13 and Elliot is 8, and anything that's like okay for Elliot to watch, Owen's uninterested in. So she was saying the one thing that I can get them to agree on are Studio Ghibli movies, which not because she's into Studio Ghibli movies. She wouldn't know what that was, but you know, Owen likes them. And so my older son. So anyway, they'll watch that. But she was just saying like, for the most part, it's, she can't find anything that he'll watch that's okay for Elliot to watch, you know, sort of thing. And I feel like Willow is going to be like, both of my kids will want to watch it, you know, and we'll watch it together as a family. And it'll be, you know, kind of spectacular enough that everybody's interested, but also playful enough that it'll be good for little kids, you know. Or younger kids. So yeah. I find that exciting.
I do too. And like one of the, one of the funny things as we roll into Willowember is just like the, it's so interesting the like extraneous material that came out after Willow. 'Cause you have like the video games, you have like, there's an arcade game, which looks awesome that I've never played. And then there's like the Capcom NES game. Have you ever played that?
I don't think I have. No.
Oh, it's,
you posted
it's
like footage a, of like, that one yesterday, right?
Yeah, I retweeted, like I, played it and recorded.
Or you had posted
stuff,
it
like,
previously.
Okay. Ago. Yeah. But it's like a, it's like the original Legend of Zelda, but Willow. But also like super hard. Yeah, it's a really cool game. But then also there was a trilogy of novels, that came after, Willow that were released in 1995, 1996, and the year 2000. And they are, from George Lucas and, Chris Claremont, who is like,
yes,
the legendary X-Men writer, the person who pretty much revived the series and like made the X-Men the characters that they've just been since like, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, in his run. And so like these books exist, and I got my wife found like a used copy of the first one, and she knows like I love Willow, and so she's like, hey, I picked this up for like $3 at this used bookstore, and I'm like, cool, I want to read this. And I was like, okay, but first I want to like look into it a little bit. And apparently these novels are like, people say are among the most complex and confusing fantasy trilogy like ever. And they are so stuffed with like lore and like so many character names. And it's like, they're like really hard to follow. And I just find that like fascinating that, you know, that these exist.
Yeah. Yeah. That's,
and
yeah,
it's
crazy.
Also the most George Lucas thing ever too, to make this like simple thing and then be like, now I'm going to make it so much more complicated.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Because these are just all these ideas I have in my head. They're all just coming out. Yeah. So I actually,
did you ever start reading it? Or?
I'm still debating starting it. Like I'm reading just a bunch of stuff right now. Bunch of nonfiction and stuff. And like, I'll maybe when we get to like Willowember, I think I might give it a go. But also these books follow like they're post the film. So I wonder if these will be like, because that's also what this new series is. So I wonder if they will be like, are they still canon? Like,
I was just Googling the books and I saw an article, an editorial somebody posted that was like, why the new Willow show should follow Chris Claremont and George Lucas's, you know, Willow novel storyline or whatever. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So maybe we will get Willow Game of Thrones, which
maybe,
maybe, you know, that's what, the creatives in charge are, they've been like poring over these books.
I'll tell you what, before Willowvember, as you put it, you can read one of these super complicated, dense Willow books from Chris Claremont and George Lucas. And I will play the arcade game because I just looked it up and it is available for the Mister. So I will I will play the arcade game and, you know, I'll spend a half an hour doing that. And you can spend like 15 hours reading this complicated book and then we'll reconvene and get ready for Willow, you know?
Sounds good.
All right. Okay. So let's talk about Indiana Jones 5 a little bit here. They didn't really tell us anything or show us anything, so there's not much we can say. But it sounds like if you were in the audience in Anaheim for D23 yesterday, they showed some photos and I think some footage, right, of Indiana Jones? Is that how you understand it?
I don't know. I haven't seen, like, that was weirdly one of the things that, like, people were like, whoa, this is crazy. And like, no one was like actually saying what they saw.
Okay.
Like, have you seen anything?
I haven't seen any like rundowns or descriptions of what people saw. No. But I know they showed, like, really they showed searched, something,
but yeah,
I think it's footage. I mean, I don't know what's in the footage, but cause it was like, I was, you know, it's one of those things where like, oh, the footage is not being released online or whatever. So I think it was footage, not just photos.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll have to see. But I did watch some cell phone footage of an emotional Harrison Ford, which was really cool.
Oh my God.
Thank you for making these films such an incredible experience for all of us, giving the opportunity to us to make these films for you. And I think, I'm very proud to say. I'm very proud to say that this one is fantastic. And this is one of the reasons. Indiana Jones movies are about mystery and adventure, but they're also about heart. And really, really happy that we have a really human story to tell, as well as a movie that will kick your ass. So I'm delighted to be here again. And maybe for the... No. Not maybe. No. This is it. I will not fall down for you again. But thank you so much. Thank you, Jim Mangold, for picking up the pieces and making a spectacular film.
Thank you.
You know, one thing.
It was great to hear him talk about the project with so much emotion, and you know, he gave Phoebe Waller-Bridge quite a bit of credit and said that she is one of the reasons this new movie is so great. I don't know if I was reading too much into it, but I feel like there was a little bit of like, this one is really good, almost to be like, this one's really good. Like, maybe the last one wasn't really good, but this one is really, really good, you know? So I don't know if he feels that way or not, but I feel like that might've been the implication. But you know, I enjoy Kingdom of the Crystal Skull enough, you know, it's not my favorite, but I enjoyed enough that I don't need him to like bury Kingdom of the Crystal Skull to make me excited for this one, but there may have been a little bit of that going on.
There may have been a little bit of that, which that movie's fine. Like,
yeah, I agree.
It's just kind of a movie that has enough things that like I dislike that makes me just not want to watch it again or ever. Like, if I want to watch an Indiana Jones movie, I have like three completely kick-ass ones that I can watch.
Yeah.
I watched all three of them earlier this year again, on VHS, and it was wonderful. Then like I got done with those, and then I was like, I could watch Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I could just pull it up on is it on Disney Plus? Maybe not.
No, it's on Paramount Plus, or at least it was on Paramount Plus, but it's not on Disney Plus.
I don't have that anyways, but like the thought crossed my mind, and I was like, no, I don't really need to. This one, and like that's kind of where I was at going into this one. And then like, I think James Mangold is a huge factor, for me. I think he's like, I haven't seen that much of his stuff, but like Logan in particular, I thought was just a phenomenal film. It was gritty, but also like there's just so much like raw emotion and just realness in that movie, that I just adored it. Even like stuff that he's made that like doesn't really appeal to me. I think he made like that Ford versus Ferrari movie, which like I probably wouldn't, I'm not like super interested in that, but people say it's like really good, especially if you like really like that stuff. So I think like he's just like an incredible talent, and like it's pretty obvious that people like Kathy Kennedy like really believe in him and are always like praising him, and you know, Harrison was praising him as well. And I don't know, like you could tell that there was, I think this is a movie that like Lucasfilm also really believes in as well. Like, you know, the way they brought out, like, you know, at Celebration, they brought out John Williams, like specifically for like Indiana Jones related stuff. Like, I think that's, you know, really telling.
He played Obi-Wan's theme also, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it wasn't like just Star Wars, I guess. I wasn't there, but on that day, but he was brought out to play the Obi-Wan's theme, right?
I'm forgetting the order of events now. I was thrown up on during that whole thing, so you know, it was a chaotic time, so yeah, I can't remember exactly.
Too much popcorn.
That sounds right. I was gonna say, like, watching this footage of an emotional Harrison Ford in Anaheim, California brought me back to a few months ago when I was standing very close to an emotional Harrison Ford in Anaheim, California. So yeah.
Yeah. But also, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, I think, is just amazing. I'm a massive Fleabag fan. And I think she was also one of the highlights of Solo as well. I have such a good feeling about this. Like, it got me stoked. I dug out Friday night. This stuff was all on Friday. Yeah. So
no, this was yesterday.
What's
the game
yesterday?
Stuff was Friday, and then this. Oh yeah, this was. Yeah.
Oh my god, the the days just run together. No, so after like seeing the Harrison Ford stuff, I dug out some Indiana Jones video games, and played some Indiana Jones games last night.
That's a sneak peek of what's coming to the Standard Def Twitter account, I'm thinking.
Posted the Atari 2600 Raiders of the Lost Ark game, which is very, very abstract and obtuse and kind of brilliant for a game made in 1982. But like very weird. And yeah, and then I played the Super Nintendo game by Factor 5, which is excellent. And then I got out, I have the Wii Indiana Jones game, which I've never actually played, but it has a, it's like a 3D, like Tomb Raider style Indiana Jones game, which makes sense. But it also has the point and click adventure game.
On the disc.
Either unlockable or like or available right from the start as well, which is kind of the game I've always wanted to play. I think it's Fate of Atlantis, which is generally considered like the best like Indiana Jones game. But I didn't get around to actually playing it, but I took it out. And
okay.
Yeah.
So that'll be happening eventually. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I think like the other thing too is that Harrison Ford very declaratively stated this is his last Indiana Jones movie. He won't be coming. He actually, what he said is, I will not be falling on my sword. Was that falling on my sword? I won't be falling down for you again. I won't be falling down for you again. Yeah. So I think just, you know, in terms of our conversation about this one's really good, I think too, it's sort of like, well, this is definitely the last Indiana Jones movie, so we have to go out on a really strong note, right? So I think that's exciting also. And then I saw some comment. I can't remember if it was it Kathleen Kennedy who said so? Or Frank? I think it was Kathleen Kennedy said that, oh yeah, you know, Steven Spielberg and James Mangold and Harrison Ford and John Williams and George Lucas are all involved. You know, what? So I don't know if that's just like, hey, once in a while we'd call George on the phone and he'd be like, yeah, you know, Indiana would, you know, the dog's name was Indiana or whatever. But like, I'm not sure. Or was he there? Did he like have input on script drafts? I mean, did he go to the set? You know, I don't know. Like, but the idea of George Lucas being involved in Indiana Jones 5 is very welcome news to me, because that is one of the, you know, little nagging things about this project. It's like George has been involved in every Indiana Jones movie, you know? So
yeah.
It's kind of sad to think of them making the last one without him really being part of the team. So it would be, we didn't really get much info, just a comment, you know, but it'd be great to learn, as things develop here, that George did have some significant, you know, kind of role in the movie. That would be awesome.
Yeah. And then that would be a fascinating behind the scenes, featurette to watch.
Wow, what a great setup to go into our final topic for today, Ryan, which is the behind-the-scenes Obi-Wan Kenobi documentary, Obi-Wan Kenobi, A Jedi's Return. So I've watched this 1.5 times now. I tried to watch it for a second time today just to prepare for this episode. Didn't actually have time to get all the way through a second viewing. I think I watched about 2/3 of it or half of it maybe today for the second time. But I did watch it on Wednesday morning when it released. And I know, Ryan, you watched it, I think, yesterday, right? So
I did.
Mm-hmm. So let's just share some feelings and highlights, and then we'll wrap the show up. I loved it. What did you think, Ryan?
I liked it. I thought, you know, it kind of hit those familiar beats of like the more like fluffy Star Wars BTS featurettes. I think there was like, you know, a lot of the, you know, Star Wars is generational and it means so much to people.
I never get tired of hearing that. I love it. I never get tired of it.
I saw A New Hope in the theaters when I was a kid, and you know, like
you're
all
damn right
that
they
stuff.
Did.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's, you know, that's all well and good and all. But it's like familiar. I think, you know, there's some BTS prequel stuff in there as well. And like a lot of that was like, oh yeah, I've seen these scenes on like different featurettes. But there are also things that I was like, huh, I have not seen Ewan McGregor in his weird, like, track
Everlast coat.
Thing.
His Everlast coat. Like, I never saw that Everlast coat.
He's like a motorcycle riding boxer, like, club kid, like, all at once in that coat. And him talking to George and, like, looking like he has the worst hangover in the world. Like, yeah, that was cool. But like the stuff where he's like, you know, seeing the lightsabers and stuff, like, I feel like I've seen that in something before.
So it was pretty incredible to see some of that new Phantom Menace behind the scenes footage. And it is, I'm almost certain it's footage that would have been shot for the beginning documentary. It seemed very much of that style. Like, the footage looked very similar, the same, whatever. And you're right. There is footage of him picking out his lightsaber in the beginning. There's footage of early meetings with George, you know, in the beginning, but, there was definitely new stuff here. And you know, for somebody who's watched the beginning a bunch of times and like really loves that movie and, or that documentary, it's just, and loves the Phantom Menace and loves Star Wars in 1999. Like, it was really exciting for me to see new shots and like, just even like, yeah, just a couple more little 30 seconds of, you know, cut footage from the beginning or whatever, I thought was great. And, it felt like the footage of him talking to George Lucas may have been the first time he ever met George. Like, you know, he turns around and sees George and like, it's almost like, oh, cool. Like, there you are, you know, but he kind of plays it cool, but also it's sort of like, whoa, that's George Lucas. Like, that's the impression I got from it. I don't know if that's really true or not, but or if it wasn't the first time you met him, maybe the first time since signing to do the movie or whatever. In any case, I felt that was a cool moment. And I loved his story too about like, you know, the first time he was on set walking around, like looking at everything, there was the underwater speeder, you know, that he saw like the model being built, or not even the model, but the actual speeder they were going to sit in for the Oda Gunga, you know, speeder, we said going to speed you away thing. And yeah, he said to George, like, the submarine, he's like, oh, will we go underwater in that?
Will we be submerged?
I love the way he told the story, because he said George just looked at him like, what? Like, it's not real. It's all fake. You know, this is like, Star Wars isn't real. Like,
yeah.
Oh, man, I loved it. Great. I loved it. Yeah. Yeah. So I thought that the moments like that were great. And there was just, you know, like all the stuff of Hayden coming back, I thought was really great. Seeing him on set, just cool to see them like layering on the, you know, burnt skin, you know, Anakin Skywalker stuff, was really cool. Yeah, I mean, and I love the way that they, you know, both Ewan and Deborah Chow kind of talked about their vision for the show. And Deborah Chow talked about how she wanted to focus less on Obi-Wan Kenobi the Jedi and more on Obi-Wan Kenobi the man, and, you know, be more of a character story about, you know, like what's important to him and what traumatized him and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I just, you know, I thought it was interesting and fun to hear them talk about things that way. You know, you said you felt like it was a little fluffy, like, you know, some of the other Disney era documentary shows and stuff. And I mean, there's definitely an element of that to it, but I got the impression in the trailer for Obi-Wan Kenobi, A Jedi's Return, that it would, you know, seeing them looking at the big movie screens with the footage on it and all that, I got the impression it would be a little more like the Skywalker Saga documentary from the Episode 9 Blu-ray. And I do feel like it's more in that vein than it is in, you know, like some of the other, like The Force Awakens, the documentary on The Force Awakens is so like, feels like it could be like a special for like 2020 on ABC or something, you know, like it's really, really like, and this is not like, it's definitely not warts and all. There's no warts anywhere. Like there's nothing critical in it, but
there is.
It's presented in a more emotional way, I feel like. Like even the soundtrack, you know, the score
if you have subtitles on or closed captioning, there's multiple parts that kind of cracked me up because I was watching with closed captioning and it's like emotional music plays.
Yeah. It's true though.
Was happening a lot. Yeah.
So what's critical in there? You say there is something critical in there?
Okay, so I think we talked about this when the original trailer came out. I very much dislike the scenes of them standing and like watching the footage on the volume. I think that is just like incredibly corny looking.
I love it, and I'll argue why in a moment, but go ahead and tell me why you dislike it.
And so like I was like, man, I wish this stuff like wasn't in there. Like we like, I don't know. It just it seems so corny to me. And alongside the slow motion walking monologues, but the one part that was great and I think almost justifies the watching the stuff on the screen is when you had Hayden and Ewan watching together, and then they're like, yeah, higher ground joke.
Yeah.
Yep. If I had a nickel for every time.
Yeah, Ewan seemed like, genuinely irritated when he was like, if I had a dollar for every time somebody told me I had the high ground. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm I like almost wish that there was like Hayden being like, yeah, don't mention sand.
Like, yeah. Right.
Like, and like just seeing them like so over that, you know, hopefully that makes people rethink their clever comments in the future.
Well, I don't think Hayden, I didn't get that vibe from Hayden. He didn't give me I'm over it vibes. You know, I would assume he is very much over it, but he didn't, I don't feel like he ever.
He's way more guarded than
you. Yeah, he did not like, let the mask drop there to, yeah. But, you know, that being said, like Ewan, you know, you just said he's not as guarded. It was overwhelmingly positive. Like, I think like most of the stuff he says is very, very positive. So when you do have a moment like that, where he's like, oh my God, the high ground stuff, that just makes me believe all the other stuff that much more, you know, cause it's like, you know, he is willing to whatever. And even one of the things he talks about in this documentary is like when, the idea was first floated out to him, or, you know, the possibility of playing Obi-Wan Kenobi, he was like, well, I don't think that's me, you know. And there was news stories about this in the last couple of weeks too, because it says I've talked about it in other interviews and stuff, but I just don't see myself doing some big budget movie like that. Like, I don't think that's something I want to do. But then you contrast that with like the footage from the beginning of him saying, you know, getting done with a stunt and being like, they asked me if I want to do Star Wars, and I said, too fucking right, you know, like, people are complex. As Moses Ingram says in the documentary about Reva, she says specifically women are complex, and it's cool to be able to kind of explore someone who has these different layers to them. So,
I thought two of the highlights, I think, were Moses talking for sure. And also the stuff about Leia. And I like how they acknowledged, they're like, people thought this was going to be about Obi-Wan and Luke, and we swerved you.
Ewan was gleeful about it. He was like, the fact that people thought it was going to be,
Yeah, and I mean, I also think, I think we're all in agreement that this was the better story to tell. Like, and it's so funny how, like, it was right under our nose, like, the whole time. And, like, we all expected one thing, and then it became this other thing. And, yeah, and just the stuff I'm blanking on the actress's name who played Leia.
Vivian Blair Lee or Vivian. Yeah.
But that stuff with her was fantastic, and seeing like some, you know, them just like working out scenes, and just the way like Deborah worked with her, and they even like talked about that. I think Bonnie was talking about like how she was like anxious about going back to this for so long.
Felt the pressure for months.
And then like you got on set and people were just like so chill. And I think that's probably comes down to Deborah, like setting that tone, and, you know, being prepared, but also having like a clear vision of like what she wants, and just like, you know, being like kind, but also like, this is the thing that I want, so I need you to do this thing. It was just like the culture and climate that she made on set, like led to, you know, really really positive experiences for people and led to a great show.
Vivian Lyra Blair. That's her name. Vivian Lyra Blair. So, yes. Yes, no, I agree. And I thought they were honest too. Like when they were talking about that, there was a little bit, Deborah Chow was saying like, I knew this was going to be one of the big challenges is like working with a young actor and having so much of the show be working with a child actor. She didn't phrase it exactly that way, but that was definitely what she was saying. Yeah, she killed it. So Vivian Lyra Blair, was amazing. So yeah. Okay, real quick, I just have to defend the footage of the actors standing in front of the big screens.
Okay.
Yes, is it kind of corny? Yeah, of course. Yeah, for sure. But I think it was an effective way of, you could communicate a lot very quickly by doing that instead of having to have, so in other words, like when you had Ewan and Hayden standing in front of that screen and you know, they're watching the footage back of themselves. It's like, yes, you can have the two talking heads or whatever. You can have them say like, you know, we loved our time together and we formed a bond and all that stuff. Like when we were on set. And you know, you might have like one comment to that effect, but 20 seconds of them standing there watching all the footage of themselves in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith and stuff. To me, it really kind of like cements that, or it's just another way besides the actors themselves literally saying it of like reinforcing that idea. And I think like the same thing with Ewan McGregor, you know, he's telling the story of when I was younger, you know, I saw Star Wars for the first time and all that. Like, okay, yes, I hear him saying that. But when I hear him saying that while he's also sort of dwarfed by this giant screen showing footage of A New Hope, you know, it's like it's communicating that idea to me on two different levels. And it's sort of, you know, I think it's more effective that way and able to be kind of like, you know, kind of cemented. That message is cemented a little bit or delivered, I guess, a little bit more concretely is not the right word, but like more effectively or more assertively because it's being told, it's Ryan, it's being communicated to me visually and also through dialogue or through what the actors are saying. So I just loved it. I loved it.
Yeah. I mean, my counterpoint would just be like, it's redundant rather than more clearly communicated. And I think just the effect is cheesy. Like when they go back to like, I feel like especially for like Deborah in particular, when they would like go back to her face, she's like, yep, I'm watching TV. like, I don't know.
I bet it was like, her idea.
It could have been. And, you know, it was the director of the documentary's idea because she didn't direct the documentary. I don't.
I bet you if she tells the director of the behind the scenes documentary to jump, he says how high. Okay, how about that? There's a pecking order, and he's not. I don't know. I'm just. Yeah,
maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe. But, yeah. But I will say again, like I'll reiterate, like I thought the part where with Ewan and Hayden watching it together, like that was effective to me because that's just like you and. You know,
this. We made this and we're looking at it together.
And, yeah. And, you know, it's like you and your friend, like watching something together and like commenting on it. Like that part I liked. And that's why I said like that part kind of justified the use of it. But I wish it would have just been like that section. And there's other things they could have, you know. Filled that space with as well. One last thing I want to say though about
I have a couple last things.
Okay, my last thing is I, you know, we knew like definitely parts of this were filmed, you know, using the volume and like you see that in action. But there are also some pretty sick sets as well. You know, the way that they had the town made up as well was very, very cool. That just looked cool. And the moving pieces of that you get from having a, you know, a live, like a real set with, you know, people, you know, moving in different directions and like some people being pulled by wires and like all these like things in action. It's, you know, it's like those kind of things that you appreciate watching, you know, Light and Magic and stuff where there's like, oh, there's like 4,000 moving pieces here that, you know, and it's all just like real happening right here. It's like people doing these things. And there's something, you know, really cool about that. But, oh, and the other thing, real last thing is O'Shea Jackson.
O'Shea Jackson Jr.
O'Shea Jackson. Talking about Star Wars and about how it's such a family thing, and him saying, everyone in my family loves Star Wars, makes me think that we may have a
Ice Cube.
A member of NWA who's a massive Star Wars fan. There may have, that clarifies the Star Wars fandom with one member of NWA.
Sure. Yeah. That was, I was actually going to bring that up. And the fact that he said he would like to have Duel of the Fates played at his wedding, you know, he loves Duel of the Fates. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Wanted to bring that up.
He was that, and he's that prequel generation that they talk about.
Yeah. Ewan also, I loved the whole sequence that was highlighting Ewan insisting on being there for Hayden's first scene. You know, like Hayden was saying, oh yeah, we've been trying to get Ewan to go home, but he's like insisting on being there for your first scene and all that. So I thought that was cool, and it was nice to see that from a behind the scenes perspective. I thought that was great. And then finally, we would be remiss not to mention the fact that they go to credits and then shortly after, you know, have like 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes of Star Wars Celebration footage. You did watch that, right, Ryan?
Wait, what?
I love it. Ian. Okay. So I tweeted, you should follow the Blockade Runner podcast on twitter.com, but I tweeted,
never heard of it.
Yeah, I tweeted. I was like, okay, make sure you don't turn it off at the credits, because if you went to Star Wars Celebration, and then Ian, our friend Ian, you know, responded and was like, oh, are you in the footage? And I was like, no, but I just know that some people, and I wanted to throw shade at you, but I was like, let's not do this. It might get lost in translation. It's on social media. Like, let's not be that guy. So I chose to take the high road. I had the high ground there, but I was like, you know, I wanted to say, I know some people, like maybe somebody I host a podcast with turns it off as soon as the credits hit and, you know, might have missed it. So
you know what? That was a generalization you made about me that is also correct. I always, you know,
because didn't you miss the Boba Fett, the Book of Boba Fett thing after
the
Mandalorian finale? Oh, that was Kevin.
Kevin. But okay. I will say that I was, when that came on, it wasn't because I was like sitting through the credits. It was because I was like on my phone, like texting you all about it. And then I was like, oh, wait, there's something here. But like, generally speaking, I do turn things off, which, know, it's like, it's bad, you know, because it's insulting to like people who made the thing, but like also to me, like just seeing someone's name isn't like acknowledging the work that they did. Like I would prefer to watch documentaries and behind the scenes footage of like the actual people like talking about this and like read what they say on Twitter and, you know, stuff like that has more meaning to me than just like sitting. Like watching credits just feels like arbitrary. Like it's just scrolling names, but like, it's not like a disrespect to the creators, which hopefully I've communicated through years of doing this podcast that, I do really respect that.
You do respect. Okay. All right. Very good.
But okay. Well, I guess I got to go back and watch that. What is in it? What's in that footage?
It's just like footage of the, Well, some of it is interviews with people at Celebration. Like, there's a couple of guys that are dressed up like Anakin and Obi-Wan from the prequels and talking to them, and other people at Star Wars Celebration. And then just like people like Moses Ingram and Ewan McGregor sort of, and Hayden Christensen talking about like how excited they are for the footage to premiere with, you know, like, well, we've been making it and now we're excited to show it to people. And then, you know, they show footage from the premiere event and stuff like that. So,
okay.
Yeah. It's just like a little, it's like basically like a, you know, this whole thing is about the making of the show, but also we had this really fun weekend where we showed off the show for the first time. And so it's just a couple minutes of footage with Deborah Chow and, you know, like I said, the actors and stuff at Celebration and getting a little bit of that feeling of excitement of releasing it. So.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yep. Yeah. Check that out.
All right. Nice. Okay. Well, with that,
did it reveal who the next villain is going to be in
Book of Boba Fett?
Yes. Book of Boba Fett, where they follow the Book of Boba Fett season two, where they follow the story from the Obi-Wan documentary, A Jedi's Return.
Mm. Yeah. No. Huh. Who's the next villain in what?
No, because that's like the Marvel thing is they always like,
oh,
you thought the good guys won, but here's...
Yeah, it was Obi-Wan and Anakin eating shawarma and cracking quipping. Yeah. So, all right, we better wrap the show up here. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast. Until then, you can reach out to us, communicate with us via email, blockaderunnerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow the show on Twitter @blockaderun and tweet at us or message us there. You can also follow Ryan on Twitter at
Via Malay, VayaMalay, and at defstan480, which is Standard Definition Gaming. It's my other Twitter account where I've just posted Willow, Indiana Jones, and later tonight, spoiler, it'll be up by the time you hear this episode, I'm posting a Star Wars game.
Ooh, okay. Starfighter. Right, very good.
Starfighter.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So, yes, thanks again for listening, and we will be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast.
We are all the Republic.